Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416.
National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, good morning, mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from your First Nation radio station here in Cairns, BBM Bumrabrip Media, 98.7 FM. We go via NERS, National Digital Radio Service, and Yarn Up Strong here on National Talk Black. Let's talk about the elephant in the room. We're talking about coronavirus. As of 9th of March, we have 80 confirmed cases of coronavirus, including 3 deaths in Australia. And regarding the figures, 40 in New South Wales, 12 in Queensland, 6 in South Australia, 2 in Tasmania, 8 in Victoria, 2 in Australia, and 10 associated with the Diamond Princess cruise ship. That's the amount of people who've received or contacted the disease, the virus. And across the world, it's creating havoc. But let's bring it home and to what we can do as in with our families and what have you. We're going to have a chat now with Dr. Jackie from Director of Medical Service here in Cairns at Wuchopperen at First Nation Radio Station. Dr. Jackie, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, thanks, Trevor. How are you?
Good, good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So, yeah, yucky numbers we're talking here. We're talking about this virus, coronavirus, and what's it doing to the people of the world, panic stations and what have you. But let's bring it home. What can we do as in families and individuals to keep ourselves safe?
Okay, so I guess the good news for us in Cairns so far is that there's been no local transmission. In other words, people haven't been cases in Cairns yet, and they're not transmitting it, you know, family to family or in shopping centres or anything like that. So the best way to protect yourself and your family is to wash your hands with soap and water pretty frequently, or use alcohol-based hand rub after contact with people. And that's anywhere. So I know there's quite a lot of shops now and, you know, lots of clinics. We've got hand rub available for people to use on our front desks and stuff and outside our clinics, and we're encouraging people to use that because that actually kills the virus. And soap and water is fine as well. You don't have to use alcohol-based hand rub. As long as you're washing your hands pretty well, that will really help protect you.
And we're talking constantly, forever and a day, every moment you got, just keep washing. You can never overdo it, can you?
Well, no, that's true, but really it's after contact with people. So, you know, at the moment, it's fine. There are people kind of saying, oh, well, you should touch feet and touch elbows and stuff like that. That's fine if you want to do that. But as long as you're washing your hands before you touch your nose and mouth, then you're not passing on that virus to yourself or to anyone else.
Mm.
And the other thing is what we call cough etiquette, which is basically that instead of, you know, coughing out into the street or coughing into your hand, which is probably the next best thing, the really best thing to do is to cough into your elbow or cough into a tissue or cough into your shirt, you know, that kind of stuff, to make sure that it's not going onto your hands where you might transfer it to someone else, and it's not going out into the air where it might land on someone either. So just those two really, really simple things can really help protect you. The other thing, which is slightly more tricky, is they're saying that a maintenance of a safe distance from other people is around about 1.5 metres. So that's actually a bit hard, you know, when you're at the shops or if you're hanging out with family.
In a bus, whatever, on a bus.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's not always feasible, but, you know, where it's possible, then 1.5 metres is good.
All right, fantastic. And what's going on regarding the so-called toilet paper? The loss of toilet paper. are people using toilet paper to wrap themselves up as mummies, or what's going on there? Do you know that?
Yeah, I've seen the photos on Facebook of the family wrapped up in toilet paper protecting themselves against coronavirus. The Chief Medical Officer of Australia has said that that's a bit of an overreaction. So I really don't think, unless you've got diarrhea in the household, probably, you know, the normal part of toilet, the normal aliquot of toilet paper is enough for everybody.
Mm.
Oh, I'll do that again, Trevor. So unless you've got diarrhoea in the household, you know, really a normal amount of toilet paper is fine. You know, you don't need to run the shops out of it, and that means that, you know, there's plenty of other people that can't get toilet paper if you've got if you're running around with 90 rolls in your trolley.
But do you know what the craze was because of it? I mean, why toilet paper? If not hand lotion, why toilet paper?
I think that's going to be one of life's great mysteries.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure. Maybe they're thinking that you could use that as tissues, which I guess, you know, in a pinch, as long as it's clean, you could.
Mm.
So, yeah, I have no trouble with that. But, yeah, I mean, tissues is just as good, and washing your hands with soap and water or the alcohol-based hand rub is even better.
And what's your thought on recommendations, probably, for getting the flu injection?
So we're pushing that people should get their flu shot this year, and that's for a couple of reasons. The first is that, you know, people who are unlucky enough to get the flu and they get coronavirus, and that's a double whammy, and that's not so good. And the other thing is that as long as you're getting your flu shot, then we protect a whole heap of people against that flu, so there's going to be less people running around with flu symptoms. And it's the people with flu symptoms that we'll be jumping on a bit later when we do get cases in Cairns, because I think it will probably come. And then we'll be testing them for coronavirus. So it just means that everyone stays a bit more healthy and we have to test less people with symptoms.
Sure. So we can do a bit by looking after ourselves. That I always say that man in the mirror, that woman in the mirror, need what we do what we need to do. And regarding the so-called deaths, as far as you know, are we talking elderly and minor, aren't we? Infants?
Yeah. Well, no. Elderly, actually, for coronavirus. So,
okay.
Worldwide, there has been no deaths of anyone under 10. There has only been one under 20, and that was somebody with chronic disease, apparently, in China.
Mm.
So the average, the people that we think might be a bit more at risk are those who are over 60 and those with chronic disease.
Sure.
So they're the ones, obviously, you know, in our mob that we really need to protect with the flu.
Exactly.
Which everyone's going to be offering flu shots, hopefully, nice and quick and easy, so that you don't have to wait in waiting rooms, you know, full of sick people and stuff like that. So we're going to really try hard this year to have a separate clinic where people can just come, get their flu shot, and then they can go.
So I'd like to think that would be the same message to all our First Nation health organisations across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nacho's been on the front foot with this. They've issued guidelines, standard of their own, and so is the Queensland Aboriginal and Islander Health Council. So we're all on the same page with this, which really does make a big difference.
Mm.
So, yeah, and the messages are nice and simple. We don't have the flu shot won't actually protect you against coronavirus, but will protect you against flu, and that's a good thing.
Sure.
And washing hands and making sure you're really careful with coughing and don't cough into your hands, just cough into a tissue or your elbow or your shirt is really the bottom line as far as what you do. And that's not just protecting yourself, but it's also protecting your family.
Yeah, yeah, very, very good advice there. Well, thank you very much for sharing. And look, let's just look at the lighting in the tunnel. And we need to do our bit in regarding keeping safe and keeping everything clean, especially with our hands. Like I said, coughing into our shirt, so to speak, or a tissue. And let's just do the smart things and the fundamental things and do it properly and do it right and constantly do it. Is that right, Dr. Jackie?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
All right. Well, very good talking to you. Thank you very much for sharing. Big shout out to all your deadly mob there at Wee Chopin, and you have a great day.
Always a pleasure, Trevor. Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Jackie there, for Director of Medical Services at Wee Chopin, and the conversation regarding coronavirus and what we need to do to help ourselves and protect ourselves and protect our families. So it is constantly washing your hands. Don't cough into your hands and actually cough into your shirt or a tissue or handkerchief as such. Try and keep at least a meter, 1.5 meters away from another person. Sometimes hard, but let's just be aware of it. And of course, look out for our elderly and also disabled people who are that way inclined, and that we can protect ourselves and of course our babies, our pickaninnies. So do what you need to do, get your flu injection, your flu shot, and make sure you do what you need to do there. Keep up the liquids, and also keep active in regarding exercise and what have you. So there it is, mob, and it's all about communication, and we're having that here on National Talk Black. And Jan Upstrong here, the Baldy on Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie, and coming live from the First Nation radio station here in Cairns as BBM Bumbabrip Media, 98.7 FM via NERS, National Digital Radio Service.
My my people, Aboriginal people. Don't forget what we're fighting for. We are Aboriginal people of this land. Custodians, my people, my people.
This is Tanya Kernaghan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now at 1800 422 416.
And the
Yes, a good morning, you mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev Murray from the Curry, live from the Aboriginal Torres Strait Radio Station here in Cairns, BBM Bumblebee Media, 19.7 FM. We go via NERS, National News Radio Service, and you can have your say by calling us on that number, 1-800-422-416. Now, the government can boost workforce by expanding hearing services program to low-income earners. More than 8,000 people could return to the workforce if financially vulnerable Australians had access to the National Hearing Services Program, HSP, according to the Hearing Care Industry Association, as HCIA. I'm going to catch over yarn now with Lynn Pozzolo. She's the leader health in economic and social policy with Deloitte's online. Lynn, very good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks very much, Trev. Good morning to you.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. Confirming the space that we're in, a lot of low-income earners in this country are missing out in regard to support, financial support, and helping with their hearing, which is a big loss for any individual. But it's the big numbers with what we're talking about here, Lynn.
That's correct. So what happens currently is program which provides hearing aids at a subsidy to a number of Australians is limited to people who are aged under 26 years old or to pension or concession card holders, or to veterans or their dependents. So there's a large proportion of the population who are aged between 26 and 64 who don't have access to any subsidised services or hearing aids, which means that many of them can't go to work, which is not the best economic sense, and so we did this economic analysis.
And so when you're talking about that, they can't go to work and they're limited in whatever they do in life, it's got to be frustrating, it's got to be hard emotionally and spiritually as well to the individual.
Absolutely. We had wonderful people who we interviewed as part of the work. You know, they were really keen to be able to work and we couldn't understand the lack of access. They were saying things like, you know, why wait until I'm a pensioner? I want to be an active member of society and work now. They also noted that when they did or if they had managed to get access to hearing aids, they had such a difference in their life, in their quality of life and in their ability to work. And the access is not that much, to be honest.
Sure.
It costs about $2,000 to provide a pair of hearing aids, or if you just need a single hearing aid in one ear, that's about $1,200. So it's not a big investment to cover low-income, vulnerable Australians through the government subsidy program and to extend it into that working age group.
And Lynn, I would go so far as saying it's not an expense, it's an investment in getting Australians back in the workforce.
Well, absolutely. So we found that, you know, of the 1 million working age Australians who've got hearing loss, over 200,000 of them, so 20% of them are earning less than $37,000 per annum, and they would be eligible to hear to receive those hearing services if we just made, you know, that the income threshold. So $37,000 per annum is not a huge amount, but it would mean we'd have 13,500 more vulnerable Australians with hearing aids and over 8,000 in employment, which is a huge benefit. In fact, the cost would only be about $25 million, but the benefits to government would be about $268 million.
So when you look at a big big figures there, big numbers in regard to Australians, especially low-income earners who are struggling with hearing problems, and then you look at the figures that coincide with that that can fix the problem, is not a lot of money in that regard.
It's not. Considering the size of the program already, yeah, it's sort of increasing the size of the program by 5 to 10%, but it gives a 10-to-1 investment because you're actually expanding it to people who are working age. So the government is receiving money back in taxation revenues, it's reducing welfare payments. The people obviously have an income, their quality of life is so improved. So it's just a no-brainer in terms of the social return on investment.
Yes, it's a very important space to be working in, and the government putting money into this system, like I said, is a good investment. So it's a very important space. I thank you very much for sharing and pardon the pun to all our low-income earners out there who are struggling in the hearing department. I hope they're hearing this. I hope the government is hearing this so we can fix the problem.
Thanks, Trevor. I hope so too.
All the best to you, Lynn, and to you and your Deadly team. Thank you for sharing, and we'll talk soon. Thank you very much.
Thanks, bye.
Bye-bye. Beautiful yarn there. That's Lynn Pizzullo, her name is, Leader Health Economic and Social Policy with Deloitte and Deloitte's Access Economics. So beautiful work that needs to be done in this space and looking after low-income earners and hearing problems that are out there with millions, thousands of Australians who are struggling in the hearing department. You can have your say, your mob, add to the conversation, 1-800-422-416. Yarn with Border Run, Trevor Tim, 20 Trev, Murray from Curry, taking right through 12 noon Queensland time. Too deadly, stay black, stay deadly, stay strong.
For all. houses, pub which calls. Stories come through bamboo.
Folks, Troy Cassidale here. You're with Trevor on National Talk Black. Don't move that dial.
Come on, drive it. Drive it like you stole it, son. Drive it.
Yarnin with yours truly, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry, live from the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Radio Station here in Cairns, BB and Bumba Brit Media, 98.7 FM, and we go via NERS, National Digital Radio Service. All right, now, fresh evidence shows two prominent southwest Victorian volcanoes, Bujibim and Tower Hill, erupted at least 34,000 years ago, and that people were in the same area before those eruptions. This newly found evidence is the most definitive record of Aboriginal inhabitation. We're going to catch up with a yarn now with David Phillips, head of University of Melbourne School of Earth Science, online. David, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. You're based in Melbourne, is that right?
Yes. So I'm the head of the School of Earth Sciences at the University of Melbourne.
Oh, fantastic. And when we're talking about Mother Earth and our findings, there's newfound evidence that our people were there 34,000 years ago with the eruption of these two volcanoes that I just mentioned, yes?
Yes, that's correct. So the two volcanoes that that we dated, one was the Bujibim volcano, which is an Aboriginal sacred site and has been for many years, and it's close to the site of the famous aquaculture system, which has World Heritage listing now.
Yes.
And so we dated that volcano, and it comes out at 37,000 years, plus or minus 3,000 years.
Mm.
And then we also dated the nearby volcano of Tower Hill, which gave an almost identical age result. And that eruption is quite important because there has been an axe called the Bushfield Axe, a stone axe which had been found just beneath the ash layers from that volcano. And so that we could say that that Aboriginal people had definitely been in that part of Victoria prior to at least 34,000 years ago.
Well, when you're finding the material, when you're finding the tools under the ash, well, that was before the ash came.
Well, exactly. So that gives you a minimum timing, right? So we know the volcano itself erupted 37,000 years ago, plus or minus 3,000, which means that Aboriginal people must have been in the area prior to that time.
Mm.
We don't know how long before that time, but that gives us a minimum age for Indigenous occupation in the area.
So in regard to School of Earth Science, you're studying the Earth and the finds of Earth, but also what comes with that, whether it be flora, fauna, human remains, skeletons, in regard to finding the movement of the Earth and life on Earth, yes?
Most of our work is not related to biological parts of the Earth, but more the physical parts, so the rocks and the soils and certainly the eruptive materials out of volcanoes. But also as those relate to important archaeological sites,
sure,
like the Bushfield Axe. And so, you know, when we're able to date some of these events that have some particular implications for archaeological sites.
Okay, and then do you have like archaeologists working alongside you, or are you classed as archaeologists as such?
No, we're not classed as archaeologists. The actual Bushfield Axe was found in 1947 and documented at that time by an archaeologist. And so my colleague on the research work, Dr. Erin Matchin, she basically did most of the work, and she researched the archaeological findings that had been done. And so what she found was that those archaeological findings had been documented very, very well.
Yes.
And so we're very confident that that the age or the axe comes from just below the ash bed.
Yeah, fantastic. And so with these findings, the material they found, the tools that are found, the skeletons that are found, are handed over to museums as such, and then goes into a record book, so to speak, that speaks for existence of mankind?
So the Bushfield Axe itself is housed at the Melbourne Museum.
Okay.
And so that's where that axe is housed. The Tower Hill Parks Board offices, they have exhibitions with a range of other stone tools and axes that have been found in the area. The difficulty with those is there's no clear archaeological record of exactly where they come from.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you very much for sharing. Look, very important information, and it just confirms once again the First Nation people of this country have been around for years and years, thousands of years, and another confirmation is just put on the table by you sharing that with us. Thank you very much, David Phillips.
No worries. Thank you.
All the best to you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Adela Yandu, David Phillips, and he's the head of University of Melbourne School of Earth Science. And State of Fresh Evidence shows that two prominent southwest Victorian volcanoes, Bujibim and Tower Hill, erupted at least 35,000 years ago, and that people were in the same area before those eruptions. With the newly found evidence is the most definitive record of Aboriginal inhabitation, and the tools and axe and the equipment that was found is under the ash. It states that the people were there before the volcano erupted, and they do know that the volcano erupted 34,000 years ago. There it is. Once again, confirmation, but we all know that. Look, have your say, you mob. Add to the conversation or get one started on National Talk Black is the name of the program. Your host is the Bawley One, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, and I'm housed at the radio station here in Cairns as BBM Bumber Brit Media 99.7 FM. We go via NERS, National Digital Radio Service. Stay tuned, you mob.
From a tropical mystical place, a group of islands somewhere in the Torres Strait. If you don't know, open a map and see. It's between Australia and Papua New Guinea.
I'm an island boy.
Silo my dinghy, we go le go go outside for die blow rip. Look round for dangal warua peace, cause all pam le go come tonight for big feast. Rape all kai kai wala,
amaiba.
When the kai kai business we go,
ame all drown.
Now clear the floor cause when the kai si go sing, we go makal kami say we go be tiny.
I'm an island man.
White man, stand up, blow, me, blah, dingy, a wap in a me, young. This one cast and bomb me, blah, you, blah, maslan. Carry him strong for the next generation. Bamba, go come. Thank you, Zazi, a maka, maka.
Are you ready?
When we go, maka, I'm coming, say we let go steady.
Hey,
I'm sake, powder, lone. One man, lo, prance, line, a lap. Hit the ground, say,
I'm an island man.
Not one lie. I'm in a lap, my fish, we soap, soap, a rap.
Pema, cool up your fly, wa iron I smoke, but the salt water finish red me eye. High grade, I want them now look for 25. New Guinea gold, what if finish all the one time kill the vibes. And that case, we're back, we're all over you, I rep this thing, we're pride. 87, no one, Chester, Mackenzie Island line. That de la Rasta, wa life from same tribe. Fuel up a dingy pass, we all go cast same time.
Come, send for the home, boy, go to York. Pour ma island ti yai ma biyo Sai baya badua uga chuyam Awara ber e rumari island Sempol to hon Boy go to yo Pour ma island ti yai ma biyo Sai baya badua uga chuyam Awara ber e rumari island I'm an island man
Not one lie I mean I love my fish with soap sopara
I'm an island man
Born from the
I'm a liar.
My name's Raven and you're listening to Talk Black on BBN 98.7 FM.
Yep, 12 noon Queensland time is where I'm taking you up to, but I'm going to catch up a yarn now. We've got Stephanie Colbert on the line, Master of Public Health, University of New South Wales. On the line, Stephanie, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you going?
I'm really well. Thank you very much for coming to the program. So our topic today regarding, underage people getting alcohol free and easy. Is that the conversation?
Yeah, so we have, along with my supervisor at the University of New South Wales, Professor Robin Richmond, we did some research into online alcohol websites for home delivery and their kind of sales and marketing practices that they have. And so some of the key findings were we found that more than two-thirds of the websites that we reviewed advertised a willingness to leave alcohol unattended at an address without ever having verified the customer's age, so just drop it at the door and leave it, which raises concerns around access to minors. So, you know,
well, who polices this, Stephanie?
Well, I mean, liquor legislation is different around Australia in different states and territories, but I mean, it's not actually the online alcohol sales have like grown rapidly in recent years, and like a lot of these sort of online technology industries, it just the legislation and regulation hasn't really kept up with it hasn't really kept up with the pace. So they haven't really, so it's not illegal or anything to leave alcohol unattended at a door. That's perfectly okay within the legislation. It's just, I suppose, we're
there's a loophole there for young ones getting access to alcohol.
It is, that's right. I mean, it's impossible to verify someone's age without ever having seen their identification or their face if you just leave it at the door. So, yeah, that's quite concerning. Another thing we were surprised to find was the number of alcohol websites that offered payment through those buy now, pay later services, like Afterpay or ZipPay, which aren't regulated under the National Credit Code. So there's the usual sort of consumer protections and responsible lending obligations don't apply, and that alcohol, which is an addictive substance, is being sold in that way, we found pretty concerning.
Yes. Yeah. So you as, well, working from the University of New South Wales, with this finding, what do you do with this information? Do you take it to the law, take it to government to talk about policing this or fixing the matter, fixing the loophole, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, there are number of alcohol advocacy groups around Australia that have flagged this with government and are calling for better regulation. And we would certainly support, you know, calls for better regulations, because delivery drivers also don't have to have responsible service of alcohol certification, although that's a minimum standard in bottle shops. All bottle shop attendants would have RSA, so no delivery drivers have RSA, although they're still serving alcohol, it's still the same thing.
It is.
They're not required, so yeah, we would think that...
Because you're not standing behind a bar, but you're standing you're driving in a car, so different license.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, silly. It could be argued that they're almost in a riskier position, because refusing service of alcohol to someone, I would imagine, is quite difficult in a bottle shop where you've got CCTV footage, you've got the support of other staff potentially, whereas compared to when you're delivering it.
Yeah, all the above.
Yeah. You've just by yourself at their house, possibly when they've got a whole group of other people there. So it is quite a vulnerable position to be in, especially like these delivery drivers don't have any like responsible service of alcohol certified training.
And safety reasons as well.
Yeah, safety reasons as well, leaving it unattended, absolutely. So, yeah, safety reasons. And so, yeah, we would also think that, you know, no delivery should really be left unattended at any time. And that regulators should ban the use of these buy now, pay later services for alcohol, which is quite problematic.
Well, it got me thinking as a parent now, a 16-year-old boy at home, hello, what's going on? You know what I mean? They're getting alcohol dropped off, and you don't know what's going on if that's the case, but there is a loophole and there's services being delivered. How do you police it? Yes, it's very important that you've... Well, it's fantastic that you've done this survey as such and this research, and there's the information, there's the loopholes, and so we need to fix up the loopholes, so to speak, don't we?
Yeah, I think we certainly do, and I think it is something that's coming onto the radar for governments, but these sort of regulatory changes can be so slow compared to how quickly the environment, the online environment changes. So, like, we've had rapid growth of this industry. In the last 5 years, online alcohol sales have averaged about 14% annual growth in Australia, which is quite significant, and around $570 million worth of alcohol was sold online in 2019 in Australia.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's it's changing rapidly, and it is something that we're going to have to think about how it's best to regulate in the future.
Well, if you don't act on it, then what are we waiting for an accident to happen? For someone to get alcohol poison, or you know, a riot starts in the street because of alcohol and young ones at that? I mean, they shouldn't wait for something like that to happen to act on it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I completely agree. Mm. And the alcohol industry, they have responded. They actually have their own code of conduct for online alcohol sales. But, you know, the alcohol industry has a vested interest in selling alcohol to make a profit.
Of course, so, it's a business.
Yeah, so we don't think self-regulation is appropriate. Self-regulation is an industry strategy to try and place minimal controls to prevent any real...
They say, you are.